Welcome to the Circuit of Success Podcast.
The Circuit of Success Podcast.
With your host,
Brett Gilliland.
Brett Gilliland, Visionary Wealth Advisory.
The Circuit of Success Podcast. Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Circuit of Success. I'm your host, Brett Gilliland, and today I've got Matt Verlach with me. Matt, how you doing?
Doing amazing, Brett. Thanks for having me on, man.
Awesome. Absolutely. How's Maryland today? What's going on in this great state of Maryland?
Maryland is good. Just got back from almost a week in Canada, so it's a little bit warmer down here in Maryland.
But
life is good. It's all good over here.
Awesome, man. Well, you spent over a decade as a firefighter, and my notes here say you accidentally, I'm using air quotes for those listening, accidentally started his first SaaS company and up launch in 2016, and you serve as a CEO through its successful acquisition in 2020, which congrats on that. And then currently you're the COO of the SaaS Academy, which Dan Martell, that's how I got introduced to you guys. Dan Martell, the book, Buy Back Your Time, one of the best books I read in all 2023. So tell Dan that. And man, you guys are helping 500 founders build their business and build their dreams, man. So also a husband, you have three little sidekicks, as you call them, your three kiddos. So that's me doing all the talking here, and I'm supposed to be doing asking the questions. But let me ask you a big question, man, as always. Yeah. What has helped make you the man you are today?
Wow, that is a big question, man. So there's a couple of things, right? I think that the way I came up in the fire department was super helpful. You know, it's I always describe that line of work as you got to make really permanent decisions with very incomplete information. You know, you step off the fire truck and got about 3 or 4 seconds to figure out what you're going to do next. And, you know, I think that skill set has really helped in entrepreneurship, you know, and the values in the fire department, like the camaraderie and the brotherhood and looking out for each other that we have. Those are all things that I carry with me, you know? So I think like that was the cauldron that kind of, you know, created me and spit me out into the world 10 years later, you know? So I think that's probably the foundation of a lot of what I believe, you know, started, you know, riding the fire truck with the guys.
Yep. So how did you accidentally start a company called Uplaunch in 2016? How'd that go? How'd you go about that?
Yeah. So I was always like a closet nerd, you know. I'd always, you know, written little code in high school and just kept the skills sharp. Wasn't really using it for anything. And my shift partner, Jake, in the firehouse was super into fitness. He was a former US Marine, and he opened a CrossFit gym in Pennsylvania and was pretty much like, you know, yo, nerd, make me a website. Can you help me with this thing? And that's the fire department culture. You know, you got some skills, whether it's whatever you're doing, you know, anything, painting houses, construction, in my case, technology, you help the guys because it's what you do. And so, you know, Jake and I were already working together every day in the firehouse. And then we started riffing on just ways to leverage technology to help him grow the gym. And we encountered this problem, which was like any small business. He was the face of the whole thing, right? It's his brand. He's answering the messages for the people who want to join. But, you know, 60 couple hours a week, we're riding fire trucks all day, all night, you know, doing this other job. And so we had to figure out, how do we let that business keep moving while we're doing the other thing, right? And so that was the Rubik's Cube that we started messing with. And we started, you know, building out these marketing automation campaigns, stuff now that like any entrepreneur takes to be table stakes, but it was a little bit earlier back then. And so even just, you know, fill out the form, how do you write the emails, how do you structure all the sequences, all that nitty gritty stuff. And we realized that it worked. So like any entrepreneurial minded people, if it works for his gym, well, how many gyms are there in the US? Let's go figure that out and start doing it. So we started selling it. We gave some content away. We went on a podcast like this one. We talked about what we were up to, made a quick offer, ended up selling our first set of campaigns to like 80 gyms in 3 days, which was terrifying because I had no idea how the hell I was going to do it. I didn't have software then, you know, it was just using other people's software and, you know, setting it all up over and over and over again. It was like that 200 point checklist, like when you take your car in to get checked out, you know?
Yeah.
So we did that for a while, had some ups and downs. All the random software we were using wasn't really doing it for us. So learned how to code for real, found the smartest guy in the coding boot camp that I went to and kind of bullied him into being our CTO. And we put the band together and got after it. And we did that in 2017. Amazing. We left and went full time.
Awesome. So stopped being a fireman then, did that, and then pretty quickly sold it then in 2020, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a pretty quick ascent. And it was interesting because we had some really tough times. You know, like when I stepped off, it was a big leap of faith. I wasn't taking a salary. Jake wasn't taking a salary. And we were really like, we'd gotten to a plateau and we were just stuck, man. We were super stuck trying to figure out how to grow this thing. And that was when I first met Dan and reached out for some coaching. I was actually a client of SaaS Academy long before I was a partner in SaaS Academy. And yeah, that was a big part of what got us unstuck. But I mean, it was a solid year and a half of just stasis, you know? Just trying to figure it out. And then once we got it figured out, it was off to the races.
Yeah. So how did you have the faith to jump out on your own? You know, I think it's sometimes people listen to this, maybe they're like, man, I want to go do this thing, but I've got a good career. You know, you had a good job, you had a good benefits, you know, health insurance, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So what was it for you that said, yep, you know what, I'm going to take the jump and just go do this?
Yeah. You know, it was the way that I make decisions that kind of led me to this, right? So I actually got inspired to think this way from a talk that Tim Ferriss did. It was a TED talk from a long time ago. But he walks through this model. The talk was about stoicism, but he walks through this model called fear setting, right? Where essentially if you've got something that scares you, you sit down, you basically write, what are all the bad things that can happen, like the worst possible outcomes, and then how would I mitigate each of those outcomes? And so I kind of went through that exercise, and I realized that in the worst case scenario, I make $0 ever. This thing crashes and burns. Like, I can go back to the fire department. I had a window where I could go back. I would have lost my rank, you know, and some stuff like that. So it goes. You know, I was a lieutenant in charge of a company at that point. Yeah. So I would have lost that. And I would have had, you know, tail tucked between the legs, whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, my wife was still working. We had two kids at the time. So, I mean, you know, we had another source of income to help tide us over. And I was able to walk back through the door if I really needed to. I definitely didn't want to, but so I knew that like I wasn't gonna end up on the street. My kids weren't gonna end up under a bridge. I wouldn't let it get to that point. And so at that point, I felt kind of empowered. I said, you know, let me just go get after it and kind of burn the boats and see where it goes.
Yep, love it. Sometimes you just gotta bet on yourself, right? Even though it's scary.
Yeah, and the thing is like, just the way that our backs were up against the wall to not fail, it changed the way that we approached the business. You know, I think that if I had tried to, like, you know, let's say I was 5 years younger, no kids, and I could just keep working 100-hour weeks and do both jobs, I still don't think it would have worked because I just wouldn't have had the maniacal focus that I had on it because I was like, this has to work or it has to work. Like, I didn't really, you know, let myself have any other choice. Yeah.
What technology now? I mean, that's what you guys do. Again, 500 founders, they're helping build their business and their dreams. What are you finding right now that's the game changer out there, that's something that's coming and we better be prepared for it as leaders and business owners and all that?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a predictable answer, but I think AI is probably the biggest thing that's changing the game for anyone. But not necessarily in the way people think, right? There's a lot of fear I find around AI. It's going to take my job. It's going to replace me. I'm going to be obsolete. And I don't think that future is as close as some of the fear mongers like to think that it is. But I'll tell you what is important. This has nothing to do with running a tech company. Anybody listening to this, running any business or has any job like this, what I'm about to say will apply, is that I look at AI as something that can make anybody in any role a significantly like more efficient at their job than what they are currently. And I think that I don't worry about it replacing me or replacing people on my team, but I think when you compare somebody who's competent, knows how to use it versus somebody who doesn't, the productivity and output of the person who knows how to use it to enhance what they're already working on, I mean, it's people are moving twice as fast, three times as fast, like writing code 10 times as fast, just using some of this tooling. So I wouldn't be scared of it. I would figure out how to use it to make you a weapon in whatever job or business you're doing. And the people that are leaning into that are getting killer results.
So what about that? So you got ChatGPT. What are some other big ones out there that you're finding are a game changer?
Yeah, ChatGPT for sure is a big one. Although there's definitely some nuance on how to use it. It does some things better than others. There's for the people who are writing code, there are a couple of services out there, like something, one called GitHub Copilot, but anyway, the details are not as important. But basically what it does is it will read the code that you're writing and then tell you what it thinks you should write next. So you could be like, you know, make a login, and it would just spit out the code to make a login, right? And so there's a lot of things like that that you still need the person to figure out what to build, right? But it's helping you like do the blocking and tackling of actually creating the output. So that one's really interesting. There's a lot happening in like, you know, segmentation and prospecting, like finding leads to, you know, market to and things like that, you know, based off of a lot of different like intent, buyer's intent in the market and stuff. There's a lot of tooling out there that's really enhancing that. So, I mean, it's proliferating into almost every area of business at this point.
Yeah, it's definitely a game changer for sure. When you think about, you know, the circuits of success, we talk about success all the time, right? But what's been some of the biggest failures for you but also probably some of your biggest learnings?
Yeah. You know, the first one was a really good lesson in humility, is the story I always tell when I get asked this question. We had a moderate degree of success. This was in the first company up launch, and you know, we wanted to like tune everything up. We were rewriting the software, and like, you got to understand, this software at this point was letting over 100 gyms collect leads for their businesses. Like, they were dependent on us, right? So man, we burned this thing down. We were trying to launch this big update, and we took the thing down for like 10 hours. We had to code for 25 hours straight to get it back online and running. It was miserable. And you know, I think honestly, in hindsight, like for the type of work we were trying to do, we got a little cocky, I think, is what it came down to. You know, we knew we were kind of deviating from some best practices. We thought we were being diligent enough, so on. And we kind of paid for it. But there were the lesson in there, you know, yes, was about, you know, be a little bit more diligent, but also we had taken a very deliberate approach to our customer service and our customer success, where we had really deep relationships with those 100 customers. And I think that a trap that some people fall into sometimes is they'll try to be big before they're big, and they end up getting at arm's length with your customers. You don't know them. Like, they had our back, man. It was crazy humbling. And like, you know, after those 8 hours of downtime or whatever it was, we're over. I shot a video like this, and I was basically like, sorry, it's my fault. We're back. I apologize. And everyone was just like rallying, because they were stunned that a software company would just own it. Be like, hey, I screwed this up. My bad. Won't happen again. And those relationships really paid off.
That's great. So what are you doing? Like, what are you learning from Dan? So, you know, I see all his stuff and his content, and he's, you know, built obviously a great business and brought you on board with that. So what would you say, you know, having a front seat view to that, what are you learning from people like Dan, but Dan specifically, and then again, sure, people like Dan?
Yeah. I mean, we could probably burn 50 hours running through all the big lessons he's taught me over time. But a couple of them, you know, for me, like, Dan and I are an interesting pair, right? Is the CEO COO kind of relationship, where he, as you can imagine, is an incredible visionary, right? He'll dream bigger than 10 of you and 10 of me put together, and somehow figure out how to make it happen. And so where I thrive is in the details and the implementation of taking the vision and, you know, bringing it into earth, right? Into real life. Right. Yeah. But so the thing that I've learned from him, though, is that, you know, defaulting to my natural approach of being the operator, sometimes I might not, you know, dream big enough. And so he's really pushed me over the years. Because between either him as my coach or as my business partner, we're going on 6 years now, our relationship. And so, you know, he's really pushed me in fitness, in business, in life, to just dream a little bigger and not necessarily worry about the how. You know, if you're dreaming, and it's a really cool concept of like, you apply a time domain to a conversation where we say, you know, like, Brett, what do you want your business to look like in 3 years? If you enforce the 3 years, it's far enough away where you don't have to worry about the, you know, the nuts and the bolts of how you get there. You just figure out what you want. And so I think that, you know, setting a vision and then backing into the goals from the vision has been a really great exercise that he's definitely helped me do. There's a ton more, but we could start with that.
Okay. Perfect. And what about culture? I mean, obviously culture is important for any of us, whether that's your culture at work, culture at home, culture in the locker room, if it's for sports.
Yeah.
What do you guys do to help build your culture and make sure that goes throughout and permeates throughout the whole company?
Yeah. So our culture is a deliberately crafted one. You know, there's a lot of companies who say that they're a family. We can't stand that. We're not a family at work. Okay. We're a championship team. And there's a difference. You can't get cut from a family, right? You don't necessarily, I mean, I guess you can, but it's a little dysfunctional, right? But
it'd be a little weird.
Yeah, right. But in a team, like, your seat is going to the person who puts the points on the board, right? And it doesn't mean that we're cutthroat. Like, we have very deep relationships with a lot of trust, but we have the underpinning that also the business itself needs what it needs. And for anybody from the C-suite to the directors to the individual contributors, at the end of the day, the business needs what it needs. And so that's the foundation of our culture, is that it is a championship team. But from there, you know, one of the things that I think doesn't make us necessarily unique, there's other companies that do this really well, but I think rare would be the right word, is we have a really open communication style. That's not a recommendation. It's the standard. It's the way we're expected to communicate. And so, you know, in our leadership team in particular, you know, we call it every hand on every steering wheel, where like, if something comes through that leadership team meeting, even if it's in marketing, you don't know anything about marketing, but like, if it gets past you, you don't question it. It's the same as endorsing it, as signing off on it. Like, anything that we tolerate, we endorse implicitly in our culture. And so, you know, we try to build it. It's almost like a continuum, right? Where there's like this unbridled intensity on the one side, where the business needs what it needs because our customers are depending on us, bro. Like, we've got to nail it. You know, we've got to grow and be solvent and be dialed in because that's what they deserve, you know? And then on the other side of the continuum from the intensity is the empathy, right? Where like, we've got a core belief that I coach everyone on, that we don't hire the work version of a human being. We hire the whole person. You know, we know where they're from and how they grew up and what they believe and how those experiences impact how they show up to situations. And so we definitely try to take a pretty deliberate approach in those relationships, because I think, like, you know, rallying behind a business goal is great until the business goal is the thing that's pissing you off and getting off the mark. And then it's like, it's the people next to you that get you through.
Yeah, that's so true, isn't it? I mean, and you got to be connected, man. Connected. I think we talk a lot about mission and vision aligned too, and values aligned. And, you know, when you work with people that you're aligned with on all those things, it just, it clicks, right? It clicks really, really well. And you look forward to spending time with them. You know, that's an important thing. You got to have some fun.
100%.
When you hear the saying, inspect what you expect, what comes to mind for you on that one?
Oh, man, my whole professional life. I'm a big proponent of that exact philosophy. I coach my own leaders on it. You know, it's the interesting thing about inspect what you expect to me is that it's different from being a micromanager. And the difference is in how you react to the things that you find when you inspect what you expect, right? And so I think it's worth understanding the difference, at least the way I see it, right? Where there's a lot of people in leadership positions, they'll start getting all up in your work and they'll be looking at emails and doing this and doing that. And like, immediately jumping in and just kind of like getting in your sandbox and playing with your toys. You know, they'll just get in there and they'll change the code, or they'll reply to the customer, or get in there with their hands. And that's where I draw the line. Like, I inspect a lot. I'm always looking. Like, I actually, one of my assistants, she went on maternity leave, and in her like transfer document, she wrote down, "Don't worry about where Matt is. He's everywhere." Right. Just because I'm always just checking stuff out. But the key to it is working through the person who you're inspecting or whose work you're inspecting to get the outcome you need. And one of the ways we do that, like, for leaders, we coach them to follow a principle we call 10-80-10, right? Where essentially, like, for any project, you're involved most heavily in the front 10% and the last 10%, right? So you know, up front, set the vision, set the desired outcomes, the intent of the project, step back, let people work, and then right at the end, come back in, make sure it's not off track, give a little coaching. And so a super efficient way to at least make sure that you're still inspecting things, and won't get surprised, but without micromanaging people.
Yeah. Well, I think it's true. I mean, I love that. I remember that from the book, the 10-80-10 is, if you micromanage people, you're going to drive them nuts, man. It's like, hey, do what you're uniquely qualified to do, and then get the hell out of the way, show a vision, share the vision, get out of the way, and then come back in at the end. And that's why you hire great people. So any tools you could share, anything that you use for that, inspect what you expect? Is there any, like, you know, things that you use on a daily basis or anything?
Yeah, we keep our stuff. It's funny, like, people expect us to have all these crazy tools and stuff, and we keep things very, very simple. So, you know, the biggest tool from a metric standpoint, and we literally build it in Google Sheets, like, it's nothing fancy, but we have this thing we call a precision scorecard, right? Where I've got, personally as the COO, like, about 380 different data points that I track every single week. And it doesn't need to be that complicated to work. I'm a nerd. I like data, right? But at the end of the day, even just having like 3 to 5 key metrics per department, the key is measuring on a weekly cadence. And so the biggest tool that I use is that scorecard, where I know that, you know, if someone on my team is responsible for 5 different metrics, I measure them every single week, Monday to Sunday. I can see how they're trending. And then we use this crazy technical process called a traffic light system on how we're doing versus our goals, right? If it's green, we don't talk about it. If it's yellow or red, whoever owns the numbers got to have a plan. And we run that cadence every single week. That's the foundation for inspecting everything. And from there, we can get deeper if we want, but that's the foundation.
And I think there, the thing I want to point out is, and you said it, is every single week. You know, I think so many times teams, they'll be like, ah, we don't really need to meet today. We don't have that much to go over. And then you find it's okay, we could do that. And then you do that maybe once a month, then it's three times a month. And then, oh my God, we haven't met in 6 months. Right.
Right.
And so we're pretty clear on that too, is we're very clear on that, is we meet every Tuesday at 9:30.
Yeah.
Every Tuesday at 9:30, executive team meets no matter what. Some meetings are 15, 20 minutes. Sometimes they're an hour and a half. Right. It just depends. So I think that's important. And that's a key from what you just said there for leaders listening to that, is make sure you're committing to your team and then stay committed every single week.
Yeah. And the reality is, like, it's funny. One of the things I see happen in a lot of companies is you'll see a signal, and I'll explain this in a minute. You'll see a signal, but you'll misinterpret what it actually means and make the wrong decision. And so what I'm saying here is, like, you know, if you're meeting every week and it feels like a waste of time, what that signal is telling you is not that you shouldn't meet every week. It's that you should do a better job with your weekly meetings. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, like, yeah. I almost think of it like a song or like a choreography where there are rhythms to how we do business, you know? And so, like, when we do a weekly meeting, we have a very specific rhythm from Patrick Lencioni's teachings in Death by Meetings. We do a lightning round. We do metrics review. We do project review. We do discussion points. Like, it's the same. Everyone knows what to expect. And, you know, especially in a leadership level, if there's a lack of things to talk about, either you got the wrong leaders or you haven't set ambitious enough goals, because it shouldn't be easy. It's supposed to be hard. You know, if all those things are true, you'll never have a lack of great things to work on together.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just that connection piece on what's actually getting done, being able to hold people accountable, back to what we were talking about too, is it's a big deal. But I do think there's that's the special seasoning, right? Is doing it time in and time out and then hearing the process, right? You're like, we do this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
Well, that's the process, right? And then just be, you know, smart enough or dumb enough to just follow it every week, right? Don't try to reinvent the wheel. Just do it every single week.
Yeah, yeah. Fair? I mean, updates to your process should be deliberate and not that often and well thought out, you know, but like there should be something that defines how we do things around here in any business, right? You know, for me, a big part of that's the weekly planning and the weekly meeting and the quarterly planning sessions. You know, that's the anchor of our rhythm in our business. Yeah.
What are you finding the most successful leaders, founders, yourself, business partners? What's the daily habits, right? What am I seeing every single day if I follow you around and these key leaders around? What's happening?
Yeah. Physical fitness is a big one. And I'm not saying that every human on earth needs to go run marathons and be powerlifters and do all that. Sure. Like, being healthy can mean whatever it means for you. But whatever it means for you, doing that every day. You know, what we say in our company is we sweat every day. And that could be a walk around the block, you know, but whatever it means for you, just getting into that rhythm of healthy habits. Because, you know, at the end of the day, man, it's like most of us are doing like thought work, right? If you're working on a computer, if you're working from home, like your throughput as a leader or as an individual contributor is dependent on your mental state. Your mental state a lot of the time is dependent on your physical state. So like sleep, diet, and, you know, some type of training. So that's a big part of it for us. The other thing, at least with our leadership team that we do, this may not apply to every company, is we really encourage our team to work in public. You know, Dan is kind of our lighthouse. He's a content machine. You know, and so the other executives now, myself, Johnny Page, we're starting to put more content out into the world, do more podcasts like this, but we really encourage it throughout the organization. Cause you know, it's a really, and there is a reason, like it's not just producing for the sake of producing. It's incredibly helpful with recruiting, right? Like people don't quit their jobs. They quit their bosses. We've all heard that before, but like that same thing can be inverted, right? They can say, I want to go work with Brett because I've seen Brett's podcast and Brett looks like an inspirational leader. And then they come chase you. Like if you can take your magic and put it out into the world, when it comes to recruiting, you can leverage that to build relationships with candidates. And like every hire is just about increasing the talent density on the team. And so anything in service of that is time never wasted.
Yeah, that's great. I saw Gary Vee put a post out and he's like, you know, we need more people putting out great content because there's so many people putting out bad content. Man, we gotta overwhelm the numbers here.
Yeah, he's not wrong. And like, that's what I was one of the one of the points I had mentioned with AI. It's like everyone wants to use it to just, you know, magic up 1,000 blog posts, but there's no shortage of mediocre AI written content out there on the internet. So like use it to brainstorm, but it's not a silver bullet. Like you still got to put the reps in personally.
I think I read today that some executives at Sports Illustrated get fired because I found they were creating articles out of ChatGPT. I don't know if it's ChatGPT, whatever they were using to create articles and publish them. Did you see that?
I didn't see it. That's wild, though. It's
yeah,
especially like when you're a publication, you know, I like, and it doesn't mean not to use it. I think this is where people get the mixed signals, right? Like, it's an incredible ideation and brainstorming tool, more so than it's a tool to produce the written content. You know, I was on a hike with another founder. That's why I do like a weekly founders hike in my community here in the DC area. And this guy told me he uses ChatGPT to create a virtual advisory board, right? So he'll have it consume like everything that Seth Godin or Tim Ferriss or Jim Collins or whoever has written, and have it consume that body of work and then ask it questions about his business. And it'll actually like go through everything that whoever this person is and tell you what they would think or what they would say to you. And like that.
So how do you how do you have it consume all, say, Tim Ferriss's stuff? And is that so ChatGPT or is that?
Yeah. And it's usually got most of it. Like, I think the most current models now are updated through 2023. So anyone with like a large publicly posted body of written work, right, is the key. Yep.
If they've done
a ton of writing, then it's likely in there. And again, like, directionally accurate, it can hallucinate, it's not a silver bullet, all the disclaimers, sure. but you just like unlock some different thinking. It's a really cool tool for that.
You recommend people do the free version or the paid version?
Paid all the way. $20 a month is a small price to pay from what you can get from it.
Yeah, because the free one doesn't have, it's not updated, right?
Yeah, it's not the latest model. It doesn't let you browse. You can actually send it to a specific website if you wanted to consume something in particular. Like, there's a lot you can do. I mean, I look, it's almost the same price as a Netflix subscription. I know which one of those two things is going to bring more value to my life. So yeah. I would recommend going for
No-brainer. No brainer. How do you use it? Do you mind sharing some examples? Because I'm fascinated by it. But what are you doing to help in your daily life?
So as I was standing up my own personal brand, right? I'm about to launch a newsletter and producing content to help COOs who want to take their business from 7 to 8 figures, like figure out all the ops stuff, right? And so I had my big buckets, right? You know, finance and people and, you know, strategy and leadership. And, you know, I was able to sit down and I was doing it the old school way. I opened a doc and I just like brain dumped all the different topics in each of those buckets, right? And that, I got started. And I said, but I know that there's probably things that I'm missing. And so I opened up ChatGPT and I explained to it who I was and who I was writing for and gave it a pretty detailed description of who my, you know, ideal reader was, gave it the buckets. And I said, you know, come up with, you know, for each of these subtopics, give me 20 video ideas with three bullet points per idea about what you think would resonate. Look, some of the ideas sucked. Some of them were horrible, right in the trash can. But there was probably 40, 50% where I was like, oh, I didn't think of that. Or I didn't think about talking about budgeting the certain way. Or of course, I should talk about onboarding, not just, you know, sourcing talent. Like, so it's just one of those things. There's no clear, like, lights out slam dunk use case, but if you're willing to parse through some stuff that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, there's some gold in there, and it's a hell of a lot faster than, you know, doing it yourself sitting at the blank screen.
Yep, amen to that. So biggest dreams now, man, when you think about your passion, your mission, your purpose, you know, mine is helping people achieve a future greater than their past, hence the sticker there. And cool. So when you hear me say that, what's your purpose and how did you come about that purpose? Because I think people think it just happens overnight and it doesn't.
Yeah, for sure. I think my life's purpose and, you know, if we have time to share, I can share another thing that I learned from Dan from your earlier question about how to think about this stuff. But if there's one thing super large scale that I can achieve in my life, I want to help like middle school to high school aged kids learn about entrepreneurship and the business related skills that they would need if they choose that as a career path. Yeah. Because I think that there's so much emphasis on the path, right? You go to high school, you go to college, you get a degree, you get a job, bah, 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 and like the world is changing like freaking lightning, right? And I think that entrepreneurship is not for everyone. There's nothing wrong with having a job. But for the people who it is for, like for me, I didn't learn this stuff until I was like 30. Right. Imagine what I could have accomplished if I had a 10-year head start on myself. Right. And so I think that for whoever it would help, being able to help high school aged kids just learn the basic skills around like finance and sales and how to talk to people and how to just think about a business overall. And then if that strikes them, ideally have some type of vehicle to help them start their first business. You know, that's the downrange goal that I'm pointing towards.
Yeah. Well, it's needed, right? It's, I mean, it's so needed. I get to go to my son's eighth grade class and talk about the stock market and investing and, you know, what is an IRA and all those things. But, you know, I've done this for so long that it's second nature because it's what we do, right? Just like your job is second nature, but you don't realize how needed entrepreneurship, finance, like it needs to be part of our school system. And it's 100%. Crazy. I used to be the NFL when the St. Louis Rams were here. I was the spokesperson for them during training camp. I would go in and educate the guys, the football players on money and all that kind of stuff. And I was always blown away that these kids would come out of these, you know, great schools and phenomenal athletes, obviously, and they knew nothing, right, about taxes and paying your agent and what it's going to mean, you know.
Yep.
And it just blew my mind. And so I think you're right, man. I think it's something's got to change for the next generation to be able to really understand entrepreneurship, understand money, how it works, and how to take care of it and how to grow it.
Yeah, 100%, man. Yep. All the way.
So where do our listeners find more of Matt?
Ooh, all over the place. I am mattverlaque.com. It's V-E-R-L-A-Q-U-E. It's kind of complicated. But mattverlaque.com. I'm Matt Verlaque on all the socials. Specifically, if you're a software founder, want to get coaching, sasacademy.com is where we go for that. But yeah, I'm all over the internet trying to make a little splash.
Well, we will get all this in the show notes, my friend. And it was great having you on the Circuit of Success. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for your time, Brett. Appreciate it.